Now, why have you decided to publish a book of lyrics? What's led to this happening?
Well, it's basically so I can find them all in one place myself, generally, and at many levels.
Aren't they all on the inner sleeves of all those albums? Can't you go back and pull them out?
Well, you know, this way you can just turn up at the gig and remember all the songs you've written. And
do you need one of those sort of prompters like, you know, Barbara Streisand has to?
That world is much more modest, I'm afraid. But no, it was great to actually, it's great to collate them and collect them all into one volume. Your life doesn't amount to much, you know, if it's in a little book. But it is great to have it all collected together.
As with any artist, though, I mean, this must be a really interesting process to go through, I'd imagine, when you're talking about 30 years of writing, of songwriting and so on. There must be, I mean, I'm sure you can't remember every single song that you've ever written, or can you? I don't know.
You do. I mean, there's a lot of them that don't make it, you know, that fall by the wayside. And you often, you know, looking back, what was interesting about this process was looking back through journals, 30 years of journals, and finding little drawings and songs that you've started to write and abandoned or forgotten about. That was an interesting process in itself. And I guess what's interesting about a book is, like you said, you see 30 years of your life condensed into, you know, 130 songs or whatever. And it is, I mean, it's in chronological order. And I can look at it and look through it and basically see my life condensed, which is a very interesting process. I mean, it seems a simple enough thing to do, just to collate the songs together and put them all in a book. But, you know, it's my first endeavour at doing anything like a book. And it's a very taxing, very complex sort of thing. Indexing, you know, all those little aspects. Proofreading, pulling it all together. Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But a labour of love, too. Yeah.
Were there many surprises for you as well in the process of doing this, when you're going back 30 years? And were there songs that you had perhaps hadn't visited for some time, or hadn't thought about for some time, or might have looked at and thought, oh, I don't know, perhaps new meanings came out of them when you read the lyrics?
Yeah, what's interesting is in a book, they stand naked. The words are naked on a page. You know, they don't have the music to give them an emotional context. And so they're just, they're words on a page. And some of them really hold up well. And some of them need the music to kind of bring them to life and stuff. But it is interesting. And some things along the way you write as poetry and set to music. Some stuff is written as songs. So it's just very broad. And in that sense, too, you not only see your life in a chronological context, but you also see lots of stages that you've gone through with your writing, different influences along the way, you know, where you've been influenced, say, by... I was very influenced in the 70s by an Australian writer called Michael Dransfield, who had this great process of democratising language, which was... There were no capitals. Everything's lowercase, and
which is hard to express in a song, I'd imagine.
It is hard.
People don't know if you're singing in lowercase, or maybe they do. I don't know.
So and that's one example, Jeremy, of how the written word is different to say the sung word. You can't sing it in lowercase. So how some of that stuff, and I mean, look, there's lots of stories. I mean, it's basically your life and your life's travels. And look, no one's life is that interesting. Probably the greater body of these songs are other people's stories, you know, which is a large part of your job as a songwriter, is actually telling other people's tales. So I think in that sense, it's an interesting collection of... experiences
and meetings
and places.
Yeah, because I think you do make reference to that in the preface as well, about the idea of listening and how everyone, of course, has a story to tell. How does that sort of work for you then? Are there things that you store up and then later on you might remember something that someone's told you and think, oh, well, that might work for a song? Or I suppose in some cases you have to be upfront about it, do you? And say, like, your story is this song? Or
I suppose it's condensed thought or condensed experience. There are some songs, for example, that are historical and you can't, that deal with history, and you can't mess around with that. Mm. You know, you can't take liberties with history. It involves a lot of research, and you have to put in a lot of hard yards to make sure that you're historically accurate. Other things are purely, other songs are about feelings or very transient sort of experiences or feelings. Very hard to put the finger on. Music gives words in this context, in the context of lyrics, gives it an emotive language, which differentiates it from poetry, because poetry, everything is in syllables. In music, you can sing one syllable for as long as you like, you know. You know, there was a time. So it's different to poetry in that sense. It's a bit like beachcombing. A song can contain a number of gathered phrases from all over the place. Mm. Little shreds of wisdom, I guess, from sometimes sitting out in the middle of the desert under an old tree with an old man, sometimes with your contemporaries, partners, loved ones. My father was a fountain of wisdom and a great man for collecting sayings and little pearls of wisdom. And I guess you're trying to make songs that are useful. You're trying to build something that is useful. Mm. And some songs take a long time. It takes a long time to get the form, get it all right. Mm. It takes a lot of work to make something sound effortless. You know, Yeats talked about the inspiration, but then you have to work hard to belt the hammering into unity, he called it.
Mm.
And you've got to panel beat it and spot weld it until you get it into a shape that's, you know, feels right.
So are you that sort of songwriter then? You're somebody who does labour over things? Or are there... It's one of those interesting things, isn't it? A lot of songwriters will tell you their best songs or the ones that, for whatever reason, might resonate more widely are the ones that are done and dusted in 15 minutes or whatever. But does that ever happen to you? Do you ever sit down and like, bang, there's the song?
I don't think there's any rules. And I think most of it's hard work. And every now and then, I think you're given a gift. You know, something will simply almost write itself.
Hmm.
That's the exception and not the rule. Most of it's hard work, and it's a discipline, you know. It takes a long time to, like I was saying, to hammer it into unity, to get the words to fit, to feel right, to try and communicate the idea you're trying to communicate to the listener, to get beyond a personal experience and make it a general experience, mm-hmm. so that it's not just an indulgence, but it's actually something that's useful in the wider community. Otherwise, you know, keep it to yourself.
Mm.
So, I mean, there is a public dimension, yeah.
Which is an interesting thing, because so many songs, of course, you know, about love, you think, well, what point does that have to the wider community? But it's something else altogether, I guess, isn't it?
Well,
it's a different purpose or a different you know.
We share, I mean, I think what is interesting is the kinds of experiences that we do share as humans and our common humanity. Sometimes you're pushing the boundaries, in a social context or a social political context, or sometimes it's trying to find a new way to talk about love or relationship or, you know, that well-worn topic.
Mm.
But, you know, these are the things we wrestle with every day. And like I said, at the end of the day, you're trying to be useful in the same way as a builder might be useful. And there is a degree of construction that goes on in a song. I know it sounds ridiculous, it's, you know, a handful of words on a page, but the amount of work that often goes into a song just to get those words into the right shape and form and stuff.
Mm.
And that's a very different thing to prose, which is a different animal.
Yeah. You've alluded as well to the, or mentioned the idea of them being naked in this book, being removed from their musical accompaniment.
Mm.
How does that work for you, again, that process then, when you are writing a song? Do the two things sort of come at the same time? Or did you try to sort of be aware of the sort of musical, you know, feel you might be after when you are writing the words?
I've tried to trace it over the years. You know, like as I've gotten older, I try to trace the creative process. Where do they come from? But sometimes there's a tune and then you've got to fit words to that. Sometimes there are words and you have to fit a tune to that. But I think most commonly as much as I can identify it, I think there's a phrase, and that is both words and some kind of a tune, and it grows like a virus out from there. That's the best way, I guess, I can describe it. It's like putting a virus in a culture dish and watching it then, and then growing it out from there. You start with a problem and you have to find a solution or something.
Which is an interesting process to go through once again, isn't it? When you do write them down like this, or when they're just presented to you in a book away from that music. And obviously a lot of people who read this are going to know what the music is, and they're probably going to not be able to not hear it while they're reading the words, but a lot of people might not know or might not be familiar with everything.
Yeah, they're just the words. So they've got to be able to hold up on their own without music. And I take a lot of time with words, Jeremy. It's important to me, you know. And hopefully a lot of them will still have little bits of knowledge and wisdom and experience and whatever that's useful outside the context of music.
It's a way to sort of disguise a message sometimes as well, isn't it? Because I'm thinking there are plenty of, you know, great songs which pack a real punch, and it's probably partly because sometimes the music might be completely deceptive. It might be a very ugly or a strong lyric, but it's cached in a very sweet sort of tune that sort of snuggles up to you and then sort of says, you know, oh, hey.
it's a mad thing. I mean, you know, like, I mean, we get around in the world as humans doing that do, but I mean, if anyone could, you know, actually broadcast out loud the chatter that's going on inside our heads, you know, it's probably very disturbing. But yeah, and I guess that's part of what being an artist is to try and distill some of that chatter that's going on, some of that subconscious, the background stuff that we're, you know, our deeper worries, our deeper concerns. Look, there are some songs like The Rebel Song, which is about the Eureka Uprising, or Silver Mines, which was about my great-grandmother's story coming here to Southwest Victoria. And in the background of that is the history of the famine in Ireland. They're very constructed songs. You can't just make it up, or, you know. So it takes a lot of research. It takes reading a lot of history, an enormous amount of research just to understand the context of the times, just to get a 3 or 4 minute song. But then on top of that, I'm a great believer that it then has to be given life, and there has to be a spirit of place. You have to stand on the quay at Cove out of Cork in Ireland, where the boat she left on departed from, and stand in the that country where she would have been born and raised, to give it a zeitgeist, to give it a feeling, to give it a sense of place and meaning, an emotional context too.
Which is partly the job of the music, I'd imagine, in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and the words. I mean, you've got to find the story. I mean, it's sometimes, yeah.
I'm thinking of the classic one, which is one of those songs which, I don't know if it's a song that you get sick of or what your relationship to it is, these days. But the start of Solid Rock is a very emotive sort of beginning, isn't it? And clearly sets up what follows. If you take that away, I'm just wondering how you'd approach that song, or how you'd interpret it. It's probably impossible to sort of say.
That song has been sung for me in so many different ways, in so many different contexts. I mean, I had, and other people have interpreted it, which is true of a number of the songs. So the music can change. The lyrics are constant. And I had an American Indian, Native American group send me a version they'd done of Solid Rock about 10 years ago. I'd never even thought of it in the context of America. But when they sent me this version, which is musically influenced by Native American musical influences, I suddenly realised, it's applicable there as well. So music can shift and change, and is not as fixed a thing, say, as the lyrics, which are the story remains, I guess.
How do you, to that end, how do you treat your back catalogue? Because I'm also intrigued from an artist's point of view how hard it must be sometimes to have the public idea of who you are and what you've achieved, which might just relate to a handful of songs. But on the other hand, you have, as you mentioned, 130 plus songs here, and your perceptions of what's important and what really counts might be completely different, or is it?
It's a schizophrenic sort of existence. You have this public reality that is dependent upon what's had airplay, so people know Solid Rock intimately, and you constantly run into people who go, what have you done since Goanna?
And you hand them a copy of the book and say, well,
hand them the book now. but from my point of view, Solid Rock is one of the songs that you've written, and I'm eternally grateful to the fact that it's had such a powerful influence, out there in the Australian consciousness. But there's a democratic sense to a lot of your writing. It's one song of a large story about your life and your work and what you've been doing. I don't see any of the songs as more important than the other. You're just doing your work. In the same way that, when you've got a lot of kids, no one child is more important than the other. You treat them all equally. When you set out to tell a story or write a song or whatever, you just set out to do the very best you can do to try. And like I said, really trying to communicate something useful to the listener, rather than just being self-indulgent, I would hope.
Now, of course, you're not the first person as well to have your lyrics collected in this way or to go through this process. I think Paul Kelly's done this.
Yeah.
Neil Murray did it last year.
That's right, yeah.
And I think in his case, the book was accompanied by some photographs. She'd sort of gone through the archives and pulled out some things which gave a bit of an extra dimension to what it was about, along with some notes and so on. What else have you decided to put in yours? There's some drawings as well that you mentioned before.
Well, yeah, about... like I was saying, going back through 30 years of journals, and it was really interesting to see and collate all these little drawings and paintings and sketches and doodles, really, a lot of them, that were lying around in those journals. So I scanned all those in, and I didn't originally intend them to go into the book. I was collecting them all for my own purposes. I don't know why, but... personally, a lot of this stuff is about gathering stuff up to leave for your kids. And then Teresa, my wife, and Bernadette Walters, the publisher from One Day Hill, saw them and suggested that they, would I consider putting them in the book. And I was kind of against it at first, but when we started messing around with it, I'm really glad we did now. They're from all over Australia, from all over your travels all over the country. A lot of it's landscape, out in the Riversleigh Road, down there between Camel Wheel and Lawn Hill Gorge in North Queensland, Catherine Gorge, on the Gregory River, camping there.
They're quite detailed drawings as well, a lot of them. Are they? In the book they're quite small. Is that pretty much the size they are, or are these quite big works that you've...
Some of them are... they're very condensed in the book, of course. Images from Ireland, Ballycotteen, staying down the south of the country for a week there. Beautiful places. A lot of them are gouache. A lot of them are watercolour. Some of them are just pen and ink. Some of them are aquarelle, coloured watercolour pencils and stuff. I don't know what... it's up to the listener, up to the reader, I think, to make their own sense of it. Some images were done for a children's book years ago that I did for my kids, but it was never published or anything. And then there are some beautiful paintings in there that are real paintings from my wife, Teresa, who is a serious artist herself. I mean, I don't see myself as a visual artist. They're just something I've always done, since I was a kid. But hopefully it gives a different sense of place and memory. And
is it a bit like publishing a diary then, going through this process?
It is a bit. It's a bit like, at the back of this book, there are 30 years of journals, like I was saying. And, you know, you don't want to see, that's like a dog's breakfast in there. and this is the tidy end of it, really. This is the tidy end of 30 years of ranting and raving, you know. And I guess this is the ordered part of it where you get to perfect your world. But, I mean, life is not like that. Life's much more untidy.
Are you somebody that likes to read other people's lyrics as well? Do you ever pore over them on inner sleeves or
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. I don't have much time for a bad lyric. and, you know, I was influenced at a very early age. I read a lot of poetry, and I have done all my life. And you've got to set your benchmark high if you want to do this. You know, I was influenced at a very early age by Bob Dylan, people like Van Morrison, Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, you know, but then in a poetic sense, you know, there's so many great poets, T.S. Eliot, you know, Shakespeare. I mean, you really have got to keep pushing yourself as an artist. I think you've got to keep pushing yourself beyond your comfort zone, and you've got to set the benchmark for yourself really, really high, not get lazy. It's easy to get lazy. And I mean, look, there's a lot of poetry as distinct to lyrics that I've written that have never seen the light of day, and whether I ever get around to publishing that, I don't know. And that's a slightly different thing to a lyric. You know, it doesn't have the same rhyming dimension, you know. People like Seamus Heaney, you know, great Irish poet, Patrick Kavanagh, you know, Yeats, there's so... Walt Whitman, you know, William Blake. I mean, there are such... there's a great saying, I think Martin Flanagan told me one time, that, you know, few men read poetry and yet people die every day for lack of what is contained therein. You know, it's a distillation, as distinct to prose, it's a distillation of a lot of wisdom and thought. So,
I suppose if it wasn't for modern songwriting in a way, then poetry would probably be dead almost, wouldn't it?
It's a bit of a lost art. I mean, I know the... I think most of the major newspapers don't have a poetry section anymore. And yet, in my, probably in my father's, well, my grandfather's time, it was a certainly bush verse was a huge form here in Australia. The whole, the galloping rhyme, and the, there was no television, there was no multimedia. And so storytelling, poetry, galloping rhyme were really important ways of communicating stories, you know, like the Lawsons and the Pattersons and Adam Lindsay Gordon, you know.
Which is another whole arm that we could get into. We might have to do another time.
another genre. And that's the other thing too, Jeremy, is that, the thing is to explore lots of different styles of writing. There's lots of different styles of poetic form as well. And, messing with all those things, it's the never-ending story, really.